blow this scene. Get everybody in the stuff together. Okay, 3, 2, 1, let's jam.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
Good evening indeed. You are listening to The Projectionist here on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver, Canada, and online at CITR.ca. Welcome, movie lovers of all levels, and all the cinephiles out there, and all the night owls out there. My name is Michael Adelior, and this is a show where I review movies, share my commentaries about anything that involves filmmaking and cinema, report news on local and international cinema, and from time to time have in-depth interviews with filmmakers. I'm just a guy who loves filmmaking and loves movies. Today we have a jam-packed episode, or I guess tonight. Let's see. We have a jam-packed episode. On this episode, I'll be reviewing After Earth. And then after that, I'll be reviewing Now You See Me. And if we have enough time, I might sneak in part one of my interview with director, producer, writer of the documentary Critical Mass, Mike Friedman. So let's see if I have enough time on this slot. But so if you want to share your thoughts on the two movies being reviewed, answer any of my questions, give me a call, 604-822-2487, 604-822-2487, or you can email me at theprojectionist.citr@gmail.com. Ooh, we have a caller today? Oh, okay. So for that. Hello, caller on the air?
Hello, this is Cookie Monster. And I want to say that if you don't give two nipples up to that movie, she loves you.
Oh. Nick. Okay.
Okay. Hold on, it's Elmo. Elmo loves you too. 1, 2, 3 nipples up.
Okay, thank you. That was random. Thank you, Cookie Monster, for calling in. I hope you're having a good time over there, wherever you are. Anyway, wow. So, the night is young. Well, I guess the night is... It's a good night outside. Nice weather. And it's summer. It's getting there. Anyway, back to saying, I guess. So, if you want to call, I hope, please. Please, no prank calls, please. Just give me a call, 604-822-2487, and email me, theprojectionist.citr@gmail.com, or you can send a Twitter. My Twitter handle is @Michael_Edelior, that's Edillor, and so basically this show is, I think, talk radio, but for movies, and this show is not just me reviewing movies. So it's also to provide a platform for the community to share your thoughts and have some discussions. We have a lot. I guess we have an hour and a half tonight. Where the heck? Okay. Anyway, fair warning. If you decide to call and I'm on air, I'll put you on air. And please, no Cookie Monsters, please. So without further ado, here is After Earth. which is...
landed. Two confirmed survivors. Son, this is not training. This is a class one quarantined planet. The threats we will be facing are real. Everything on this planet has evolved to kill humans. Every single decision we make will be life or death. But if we are going to survive this, you must realize that fear is not real. It is a product of thoughts you create. Now do not misunderstand me. Danger is very real. But fear is a choice. Do you know where we are?
No, sir.
Was After Earth, you just heard there. It's directed by M. Night Shyamalan, written by M. Night Shyamalan and Gary Whitta. So to those who start from the story by Will Smith. To those who don't know, M. Night Shyamalan, let's start with Gary Whitta. So Gary Whitta, one of his credits is he wrote the movie The Book of Eli. I don't know if you remember that was from that directed by the Hughes brothers, that was with Denzel Washington, Gary Oldman. It was like this post-apocalyptic, basically it's Zatoichi Western style. So I don't know if you remember, if you know Zatoichi, that's kind of like the Book of Eli. I hope I didn't spoil it for you. Anyway, to those who don't know, M. Night Shyamalan is what I would call the Sean Kemp or the Danny Heatley of film directors. And he's a filmmaker who broke into the scene as an all-star. And his directing showed a lot of potential for greatness. Someone whose work you should pay attention to, but for whatever reason, as time went by, he could not sustain the promise he showed early in his career. And gradually, or in some people's view, suddenly went downhill and sucked, you know. He's known for writing all the films he directed. And among his notable films are The Sixth Sense, Unbreakable, and Signs. With those three films coming out back to back to back, he established himself as a filmmaker to watch out for, you know, during the late 90s and early 2000s. But then the next two films that came out of his Signs surprised audiences by not being at the same standards as his previous films. Yeah, so those two films were The Village, released in 2004, and Lady in the Water, released in 2006. So fans of Shyamalan must have figured he must be in a slump. You know, so. But then he followed it with the film The Happening, released in 2008. And then later on, The Last Airbender, released in 2010. Two films, without a doubt, sucked big time and ranked among the worst films that came out the year of its release. I said to myself, after seeing The Last Airbender, it's official, you know, M. Night Shyamalan officially sucks as a director and writer. For me, that movie was the last straw. Yeah. You know, the one that breaks the camel's back, so to speak. So I took Shyamalan's name off my list of filmmakers whose movies I will automatically watch without question, regardless of the story of the genre. So I don't know if you have those kind of lists, you know, where like it's a if kind of similar to say music. You have this like band, you have this like artist or what have you, and you have them, you know, you will listen to buy their albums, you will go to their concerts, you know, that kind of thing. So I have that for film directors. And so if you're curious as to which filmmakers are on my list, among them are Clint Eastwood, Quentin Tarantino, Pedro Almodovar, Paul Thomas Anderson, James Cameron, Christopher Nolan, Ang Lee, David Fincher, Park Chan-wook, Jun Ho Bong, Wes Anderson, Danny Boyle, Guillermo del Toro, Alfonso Cuarón, you know, just to name a few. Well, I guess I named a lot there. But once you're on my list, you have my loyalty. I will go out there and just watch your film. I don't care what it is, you know. So it takes a lot before I give up on a filmmaker that's on my list. So in M. Night Shyamalan's case, I stuck through him even after Lady in the Water, which was pretentious. And I said to myself, he will pull it together, you know, after seeing that movie. But The Last Airbender was so bad, and his attitude was so smug when it comes to criticisms of his work that he probably started believing his own hype. So, you know, good and even great directors from time to time make bad movies. But it's what they do afterwards that speaks volumes to who they are as filmmakers. Case in point, Sam Raimi. He directed the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man trilogy. The first two were awesome, but the third one wasn't good. You know? And later on, Sam Raimi came on record apologizing and saying he admits he made a mistake on how he directed Spider-Man 3, and in hindsight, would have done it differently. When he said, you know, so when he said that, he instantly gained my respect. You know, he's not on my list, but you know, you have to respect someone who admits that they made a mistake and they're gonna do something different about it. But I don't know, when it came to M. Night Shyamalan, you know, he believed so much in his infallibility, you know. So now this is the first movie where he is a director for hire. Anyway, so back to the movie After Earth. So you're wondering, why am I telling you about M. Night Shyamalan as a filmmaker? Well, to help put into context my opinion of After Earth, basically, I was surprised by After Earth. The movie got horrendous reviews, both from critics and audiences. But for me, I actually liked the movie. You know, after I watched the movie, I was caught off guard by my reaction. I thought it would suck. I mean, I saw the trailer, I was like, oh man, you know, M. Night Shyamalan? I'm not sure. But, you know, in my mind and probably most audiences' minds, Shyamalan directed movies, you know, movies that are directed by M. Night Shyamalan have become an antonym, which is a word that means the opposite of another word. You know, therefore, you know, a film by M. Night Shyamalan is automatically perceived by most audiences as a bad movie, you know. So, frankly, I would not have watched this movie if it weren't for Will Smith. As much as the movie screams of nepotism and a vanity project, I'm still willing to give Will Smith a chance. And to me, Jaden Smith was all right, you know, and showed some charisma in The Karate Kid. Or to anyone who knows martial arts, you know, the movie should have been called The Kung Fu Kid or The Wushu Kid, you know. Anyway, going back on track, the movie After Earth is a survival movie dressed in science fiction clothes. So don't be fooled by the alien monsters and futuristic costumes and set design. At its core, it's a straightforward survival movie. You have a man surviving an accident and then must find a way to get rescued while having to face life and death conflict with nature. So that's, you know, man versus man surviving an instant, then man versus nature, that kind of thing. So it follows the same, it basically follows the same structure as other survival movies, such as Alive, Cast Away, The Gray, which was awesome, you know, the Liam Neeson, the wolf, and even Life of Pi. So it follow, you know, if you've seen those films, get where the premise of After Earth is. So, but in this case, instead of man versus nature, it's boy versus nature, or I guess a teenager. Anyway, you have real life father and son, Will Smith and Jaden Smith, who also play father and son in the movie. So when their spaceship crash landed on Earth, they are the only two that survived. Unfortunately, Will Smith is seriously injured, and the interstellar emergency beacon that they have is broken. But there might be a spare on another part of the spaceship that landed 100 kilometers from where they are. So it's up to Jaden Smith to go get the beacon and call for a rescue. So to make things interesting or complicated, depending on your view, humans have left the Earth to live on a different planet somewhere in the universe. The movie doesn't say exactly where it is, because we polluted the Earth so much it has become uninhabitable for us. You can pretty much take that part as commentary to our environment with global warming and pollution, and this might be our future if we continue the way we are. Anyway, for the last 1,000 years since humans left Earth, a lot of things changed. I don't know if you saw that, you know, that History Channel After, you know, After Humans, you know, like what happens if, you know, if there's no humans on Earth, what happens to Earth? So it's kind of like that, you know, 1,000 years into the 1,000 years out without humans. And what happens is that animals evolved and everything became deadly to humans, from animals to the environment. So Jaden Smith has to travel 100 kilometers dealing with all those dangers and deadly stuff the Earth has to offer. Plus, there's an alien on the loose that is hunting him. Oh, and to top it all off, he only has a certain amount of time to get the job done. Or Will Smith dies, or Jaden Smith dies. You know, either way. So if the environment or the alien doesn't kill him, the time limit will. I'll try my best not to spoil anything here. So it's that if the core story of After Earth is the survival aspect, then the heart of the movie is the relationship between Will Smith and Jaden Smith's character. Will Smith is this tough, badass general, and Jaden Smith wants the approval of his father. A tragic event happened earlier in their life, and it changed both of them. Will Smith became cold and distant towards his son, while Jaden Smith feels it's his fault why his father is like that to him. So he makes it his goal to make his father proud. But things don't go well for him, mostly because he's doing it for the wrong reasons. Both father and son have a lot of angst inside of them. So all because of that tragic event. And it comes to the surface during their ordeal. And in order for both of them to survive, father and son must get over that tragic event. That's pretty much the gist of the plot and the heart of the movie without revealing any spoilers. So now, why did I end up liking the movie? As I was watching the movie, it occurred to me that if we look past the science fiction and the premise and the ridiculous concept of the world the story is set at, the movie is a chamber piece. You know, basically a film involving a small number of characters interacting over a short period of time in a limited environment. Additional characters and environments may exist as support to the main action, but would be few in number and appear only briefly. So a few of them would be, if you come to mind, there's 12 Angry Men, that movie there. What else is there? Oh, Glengarry Glen Ross. I think that was set in one space too. Place, very chamber piece. I think the last one I saw with chamber piece was like Carnage, all set in one room or one apartment, and that was directed by Roman Polanski. Anyway, if you've seen those films, I hope you have an idea. So, 2/3 of the movie is basically just dialogue between Will Smith and Jaden Smith. You know, similar to a two-person play in a theater. Once I realized that, I started to get into the movie. The way I look at the movie changed from it being a science fiction survival movie into a theater play between a father and son just dealing with their own issues with each other and with themselves. And everything that's happening outside, that is just window dressing, you know, something to keep you entertained. But for me, it became the reverse. I got entertained by the idea, by the drama between father and son, and I couldn't care less about the survival stuff. You can pretty much take what they talk about and put it on any setting. You know? And after the movie, it finally made sense why Will Smith wanted to do this movie. It's because he wants to showcase his son's acting. The whole film is an exercise to help improve Jaden Smith's acting. There's a scene where Jaden Smith just lets go of his emotions and tells Will Smith how he feels and the weight he has been carrying all that time. So as I was watching that scene, I noticed that Jaden Smith's performance feels like the kind of acting you see while in an acting class, wherein you're given a scene and you workshop it with a teacher and perform it in front of your classmates. It doesn't feel like he's there in the moment. You know? That's what I got with that scene. And you see that kind of acting while watching Jaden Smith. But then there are moments where he's natural and like in the scene where, you know, natural and real. Like in the scene where him and Will Smith and, you know, sitting in the spaceship and Jaden just looks at his dad smiling and happy to be with him. I don't know if those moments are just him being himself or the natural chemistry brought about by being real-life father and son. Now, if you compare Will Smith's acting, you know, and Jaden Smith's acting, Will Smith's acting has a lot of layers. On the surface, he appears stoic, but to me, that is a hard thing to pull off without your acting coming off as blank. Beneath Will Smith's stoic appearance, you see a sense there's a lot of churning emotions inside him. And as the story goes on, he can't do anything to help his son. You can see himself struggling, keeping his emotions in check. You know, that's one of the few things I like about the movie, Will Smith's performance. I find that Will Smith's performance ended up exposing the lack of depth and experience in Jaden Smith's acting. So, the third aspect. So I like the chamber's piece and then Will Smith's performance. And the third aspect in the movie that I liked was the costume design and production design. At first, when you see the buildings in Nova Prime, that's the new Earth that humans settled in. It's called Nova Prime. The use of curtains as dividing material. The first thought that comes to mind, you see a lot of curtains as a dividing material. And the first thought that comes to mind is it looks cheap. I mean, like some cheap production or something. But then as you continue watching the movie, you see a theme going on. It occurs to you probably in that time, materials are scarce, so products have been developed where it has to be super strong, but takes up less space and less resources to produce. So it's probably why walls are made of fabric and the structures are basic beams that come together to look like this giant abstract honeycomb. You know, and so instead of hard, like say, plywood walls or something, you get this fabric, super strong fabric. That's what I got anyway from watching that, you know. And no, So no more solid walls, no more like square block buildings. You can also see the same principles in the spaceship design and materials. Though the spaceship in the movie just found it odd that they designed it to look like a stingray or like a long spade, you know, like in the cards, spade. So, but you see that too, like there's like dividing wall with just on fabric or something. And aesthetically, it looks cheap. But then, that's what the thing, when I started thinking about it, there's actually thought here, you know. And then there's also the survival suit they wear that I found cool for it being interactive and functional. Picture, you know, like kind of like a chameleon. They took that principle where if it senses danger, like say an animal or something, or, you know, a predator, it automatically could change its color into black or something. And if it senses soup, you know, like the body getting cold or something, it changes its color again. I don't know, probably it adjusts itself to compensate with a change in temperature to support the body. But I found that very cool. And I also think the weapon design was cool too. You know, they have this like spear that can basically, you could like liquid metal or something that can change whatever design. I liked how they put some thought and meaning into that stuff. Not just put something there because it looks cool. So, anyway, those were three things that kept me interested in the movie. The theater play like drama between father and son, Will Smith's acting, and the costume and production design. It doesn't say much about the quality of the movie or the story, but for me, the parts of the movie that I found interesting were enough for me to enjoy the movie and just roll with it. I mean, there's a lot of things here that you can nitpick on, and if put under strict scrutiny, would not hold up. It's probably why this movie is getting slammed. A few reasons that come to mind is, one, people have seen this kind of survival story before, told in a more compelling and more interesting manner than what the writers and filmmakers did for After Earth. Two, the movie is oozing of nepotism. The movie is produced by Will Smith, Jada Pinkett Smith, Will Smith's wife, he's Jaden Smith's mom, Khalid Pinkett, who is Jada Pinkett Smith's brother, which makes him Jaden Smith's uncle, and James Lasseter. So excluding James Lasseter, three quarters of the producers are related to Jaden Smith. And I admit, it took a lot of effort for me to get over the movie being the Jaden Smith acting showcase. You know, like, daddy, I want to be an actor. Okay, let's make a movie and you can star in it, you know. Yeah, so, but to be fair, it's Will Smith and Jada Pinkett Smith's business how they want to help their kid achieve his dream. If by going out and producing a $130 million sci-fi survival movie as their way of helping Jaden with his dream, then that's their business. I mean, you know, but to the audience, it's hard to get over that as you watch the movie. Personally, if Jaden really wants to earn the respect of people and become a good actor, he should go out there and take intense acting classes, do theater regularly, and work on films that are not produced by his mom and dad. Heck, do small roles and on movies with challenging stories. I think there's more reward, you know, personally speaking, I think there's more reward if you go out there and achieve something on your own and not because mommy and daddy produced the film for you to star at. You know, so I think that would definitely give, you know, people who start looking at his work at him differently. Number three, the effects and action are not that good. Also, the bait and switch. You know that thing, the bait. You come in the theater, they sell you something, you're thinking, oh, this movie's like this. And then you watch the movie, it's like, oh, it's different. It's actually something else, you know. So people come in expecting action adventure, but it's really a father and son angst drama pretending to be a sci-fi action adventure. You know? Ironically, for me anyway, it's what saved the movie. Mind you, if you're familiar with Shyamalan's movies and writing, he does rely on that kind of storytelling. The true movie hidden under the genre. So the true movie is hidden under a genre to help sell tickets. For example, in the movie Signs, the movie is really about moving on or something to that effect. You know, it's been a while since I last saw the movie. But that story is hidden under the alien invasion genre. That's not the story they put on the trailer. So basically, yeah. It's the bait and switch. So some people might be surprised when they watch this movie, you know. And number four, two on the nose lesson teaching. So I mean by two on the nose lesson teaching, they had this, I think part of their marketing ploy, they have like, you know, those on Facebook, there's like pictures and there's, it has quotes on them. Well, they had like a while, I think I saw some like After Earth pictures and they're like putting up quotes by Will Smith's character or something. And so on the movie, it just has a lot of those things. So for example, Will Smith can't move. So, you know, because he's injured. So he's observing. So the entire movie, well, I guess during when they're on Earth, so he's just left in the spaceship and he's observing Jaden by remote cameras following him, and along the way he tells Jaden what to do and he says this quotable lines about courage and tactics and whatever helps the kids grow up, you know. Personally, I can roll with that and I actually don't mind, you know, but maybe for some that's a bit preachy, you know, too on the nose, that kind of thing. Like the saying in writing, show, don't tell. And anyway, number five, you can nitpick a lot of things in the movie that would annoy you both story-wise and filmmaking. And there are people out there that are like that. For me, you know, I've pretty much trained how I watch movies where like I just don't nitpick at all because it just ruins the experience. You just like nitpick on this, nitpick on that. I'm more like, okay, you know, just keep myself an open mind. But for some people, they can't help themselves, you know, to nitpick. So, and I think that's what maybe there's a lot of things in this movie that really are like, ugh, not, you could nitpick a lot about this movie. So, for example, I'm just giving an example here, you know, they could nitpick on, you know, there's this scene. There's like the part of their technology of the camera on their suit. You can allows you to have a camera to help others see what you see. So it's like kind of like, you know, like kind of if they kind of like a, like, you know, this GoPro. You put it on your head, that kind of thing. Well, the suit has that. It doesn't explain how. It just happens. But the strange thing about this is there are parts where, it looks like the camera from the suit is giving an objective view. So basically you get to see Jaden Smith on a wide angle from a distance, but the source of the camera is coming from the suit and not from the remote. Yeah, not from the remote cameras floating around. So it feels to me anyway that the filmmakers, you know, use that as a cheat, you know, to help justify Will Smith being able to see everything that Jaden sees, including Jaden Smith, Jaden himself. It just looks like the onboard camera suit feels like there is a documentary crew following Jaden around the forest. I mean, if you watch the movie, you'll see what I'm talking about. And yeah, so that's one of the nitpick things. So anyway, the movie had a lot of flaws, but for me anyway, I found enough to enjoy myself watching it. Side note, Will Smith, who read a magazine piece about a father and son surviving after a plane crash, he reimagined it as a space fantasy. and hired Shyamalan to direct and work on the script. So, like I said earlier, After Earth is the first time Shyamalan is a gun for hire. So, he's not his own, like, auteur, and he's under Will Smith and all that stuff. Anyway, have you seen the movie After Earth? What did you think of it? What do you think of how Will Smith is supporting Jaden's career? How did you feel after you watched the movie? If you want to share your thoughts to listeners out there, or give me a call, 604. Wait a minute, someone calling right now? I don't know. Hello? 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 Okay.
Give you two nipples up for your portrayal and, you know, unbiased opinion about movies and all. But if you want my professional opinion, and it's intoxicated at this day and time, but how about some background music? Sex it up a bit. And shout out to Crimes and Treason, you fucking rock.
Thank you. Just sorry about that. I just feel okay. You want music, background music. Yeah, I'm still working on that setup. But thank you though. What's your name? Hello? Okay. That's pretty much it there. Hello? Hello? Okay. I was down there. Hello, okay. That was the caller there. It was very random. Oh well. It's the show's still starting out, and whoever that's called, I know what you mean, like some music underneath and while I talk, but I don't know, just there's I think just keep it like clean when I talk, just to less, you know, less things to do right now. Anyway, I hope you're having a good time out there, you know. Hope you're not driving, you know, and just be safe. And thanks for calling. I'm sorry if I kinda missed it, because I don't know, I'm not really sure how to operate the switchboard here for the phone. But anyway, so if you have any thoughts, whatever, it's the night is young, or I guess, yeah, if you want to share thoughts to the listeners out there, give me a call, 604-822-2487, or by email, theprojectionist.citr@gmail.com, or by Twitter at @Michael_Edilior. That's spelled Edillor. This show is not just me, guys. So if you want to share anything, just give me a call. Before we go into that, here's a few PSAs and show promos courtesy of CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
Last night, I left the bar. I was thirsty, and I don't drink wine. I was desperate. I needed blood. I turned to the only place I could. The only place that could possibly help me.
Hello, Canadian Blood Services.
Hello. I need some blood. A. Positive or negative, it doesn't matter.
I'm sorry, we're all out of A positive and negative. Would you like some O instead?
No. No, that won't do. Thank you. Good night. Save me. Save yourself. Give blood. Voluntarily.
This message was brought to you courtesy of the Canadian Blood Services and CITR Radio 101.9 FM.
AMS Food Bank. Your access to money during the studies at UBC will most likely be limited, but it is a priority of the AMS Food Bank to ensure your access to food is not. The AMS Food Bank provides emergency food relief 7 days a week for all UBC students. To volunteer with the Food Bank, or for inquiries about how to take advantage of the services provided, contact them at foodbank@ams.ubc.ca. For more information, find the AMS Food Bank on Facebook or feel free to visit anytime across from the Wellness Center and Sprouts.
Okay, we are back. I just like to, someone called during the PSAs, and just like to thank her for giving me a call and giving a positive review. 2 thumbs up, she says. Thanks for the dedication, she says. Yes, whoever you are there. I forgot your name. I think you said something like a pseudonym. But anyway, yeah. I hope you're doing well there. Anyway, if you guys are interested in like hanging out with me and talking about movies, just yeah, give me a call. 604-822-2487. And it's 604-822-2487. Mind you, this is live not only in Vancouver, but also online on CITR.ca. And you are listening to The Projectionist. My name is Michael Edilior, and this show is being broadcasted live at the University of British Columbia, Vancouver, Canada. So, so now we are heading into our next movie to be reviewed today, and that will be Now You See Me. This movie is basically that heist film where magicians rob something, do a heist, but with magic. Well, anyway, you'll see how it goes. So here it is. Now You See Me.
Come in close, because the more you think you see, the easier it'll be to fool you.
Ladies and gentlemen,
for our final trick,
we are going to rob a bank.
On the count of three, you will be teleported through space and time to your bank in Paris.
1, 2, 3.
Everyone in this room was a victim of hard times.
Some of you lost your homes, your cars.
And so tonight,
we're going to return some of that money back to you.
Thank you, everyone. We are the Four Horsemen.
And good night.
Your bank was the distraction while they set up the real trick.
I was a $140 million distraction.
Who doesn't love a good magic trick?
FBI! Hands where I can see him.
I don't think I heard you correctly. Did you say magicians robbed the bank?
You are going to be played.
You have what we in the business like to call nothing up your sleeve. Because if you did, it means that you and the FBI and your friends at Interpol actually believe in magic. And then... first rule of magic, always be the smartest guy in the room.
1, 2, 3, and...
You want to know how they did it? Say the magic word.
A year ago, these guys were a bunch of street magicians.
Now they're pulling off amazing robberies and not keeping a single cent for themselves.
You do realize this is a game played out on a global scale. Vegas was just a start. This trick was designed a long time ago.
Dealing with something far bigger than us.
We're all here for the same reason.
We cannot quit now.
Expose them now and destroy them.
Whatever is about to follow, whatever this grand trick is,
please,
is really going to amaze. Look closely, because the closer you think you are, the less you'll actually see.
Can you hold for a minute? I'm back on air. Just let me put you on. Okay, so let me put you on your air. So I'm on the phone right now with Naked Poet. I don't know who she is, but I'll put her on air. Hello, Naked Poet.
Hello, hello.
Yes.
Okay, I want to do an impromptu interview with you right now.
I don't know about that.
Oh, come on. I want to know. How old were you when you brought a girl unchaperoned to a movie?
Unchaperoned to a movie?
Yeah, like when you don't bring your parents with you you do nowadays.
I know what unchaperoned is, but I don't know. That's a bit personal
to
talk about on the
When's
air.
When's the first time you brought a boy to a movie unchaperoned?
The heck? A boy? I don't know.
Okay,
I can't remember.
An alien. When's the last time you brought some sort of life form to a movie with you that made you cry?
I don't know. It's like, that's the thing. It's like, I have a bad memory. Like, I can't, you know, like how things, like, people remember in detail what happened and when they were
like
kids?
Like when Callum talks like this, and then you go...
Okay, that was enough of Naked Board over there. Look, Naked Board, if you're hearing right now, that's pretty much it for that. I highly said, I apologize to those listening on air for that Naked Poet. Anyway, back to what on track here. We're reviewing Now You See Me. So, let me see here. It's okay. Now You See Me, directed by Louis Leterrier. He's the director. To those who don't know Louis Leterrier, he's the director who did Transporter 1 and Transporter 2. You know, that movie where Jason Statham is this driver. So that was what that movie is. Okay. And he also did Unleashed, which was, I find it's a good movie. That was with Jet Li. The first time seeing Jet Li, in a dramatic role. There's still action there. And had Bob Hoskins being an evil guy and Morgan Freeman. And he did Clash of the Titans. Not part two, the first one, part one. And yes, I know what you mean. That movie is, you know. And according to him, he disavows Clash of the Titans. Anyway, the screenplay for Now You See Me was written by Ed Solomon. He's known for credits that he wrote Men in Black, Charlie's Angels, and then there's Boaz Yakin. He wrote the movie Safe. That was wrote and directed the movie Safe with Jason Statham, and that movie was really awesome. I find that movie was awesome. I like that movie. It's very solid. It's like things that you would come to expect on an action genre, and then they do the opposite, which is awesome. You know, that's how you do invent it, you know. And then also the third writer, Edward Ricourt. And on IMDb, it says it's his first screen credit. And it's from the story by Boaz Yakin and Edward Ricourt. So, to recap, Now You See Me was directed by Louis Leterrier. Screenplay by Ed Solomon, Boaz Yakin, and Edward Ricourt. From the story by Boaz Yakin and Edward Ricourt. On the trailer here, it says, "Come in closer, because the more you think you see, the easier it is to fool you." When it comes to heist movies or mystery movies, I find the key clue to solving the mystery tends to be revealed nonchalantly. So if you're paying attention, you can spot the key pretty easily. I had a lot of fun watching this movie. I love heist movies, and as I was watching this movie, I was smiling. I enjoyed myself. That movie starts with the introduction of the four main magicians, and each is given an efficient introduction, revealing to us their skills and specialties. There's illusionist J. Daniel Atlas, played by Jesse Eisenberg. To those who don't know him, he's the guy who played what's his name? The guy who founded Facebook. Yeah, that guy. Oh man, I can't remember. He's a billionaire. Anyway, yeah, he's played by Jesse Eisenberg. Then there's Mentalist Merritt McKinney, played by Woody Harrelson, and there's escape artist Henley Reeves, played by Isla Fisher, sleight of hand con man and small time trickster Jack Wilder, played by Dave Franco. So that's the four of them. We see a mysterious figure watch each one of them, and later we see them discover a tarot card, an invitation to meet at a place at an exact time. So they go to that place, and from the fast forward, and then fast forward 1 year later, they're in Las Vegas. They're now superstar magicians, collectively known as the Four Horsemen. And then from that moment on, the heist has begun. The twist about their heist is that they are not concerned when it comes to hiding what they did. In fact, they flaunt it. And they're pretty much being Robin Hoods. They steal from the rich and give to the poor. So why, you ask yourself, why do they do this? What's their end goal? Why flaunt it? It doesn't make sense. So like any good mystery movie, it asks you the questions and teases you if you can solve it before the movie's end. Who's that guy, the mysterious guy watching them? So there's a lot of questions there. So like any great heist movie, you must have someone to chase you. So the cat to our four mice, is basically FBI agent Dylan Rhodes, played by Mark Ruffalo. To those who don't know him, he's the guy who played Hulk in the Avengers, which is awesome, by the way. I keep saying awesome. Anyway, and which is true, the Avengers is awesome. And there's all, and he's partnered with Interpol agent Alma Dre, played by Melanie L'Oreal. She's the French theater owner. So to those who know him, she's the French theater owner in Inglourious Basterds. She's the one who's at the beginning of Inglourious Basterds, she was hiding under the floorboards of the house, and then she was running around across the field, covered in mud or something. And, Christoph Waltz was like, see you later, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, that's her, Melanie L'Oreal. So from then on, it becomes a cat and mouse game. But this game is more Tom and Jerry than equal adversaries, After they do the first heist, basically that's how it goes. It's just straight on chase movie. And there's no mistaking in this movie who you are rooting for. You're rooting for the Four Horsemen. And the fun part is the reactions of Mark Ruffalo getting out maneuvered and getting pissed off. It's like bugging or teasing a friend or a brother because it's so fun to see their reaction. So from the moment they do their first heist in Las Vegas, it becomes a chase movie. Like a passenger airplane. Once it leaves the airport, it has a schedule to clip. So that's, once it starts, the heist is on, it just goes straight, moving on. And it moves at a breakneck speed. In fact, most of the time, the perspective we see is from the pursuer, not from the pursued. To help guide the audience along the chase, we have magic debunker Thaddeus Bradley, played by Morgan Freeman. And he likes what he does. He goes around. He's the kind of guy who destroys dreams. He's the kind of guy who goes, Santa Claus is not real, or the Easter Bunny, or whatever. He's just kind of guy. And at a certain point in the movie, you have scenes where people ask Morgan Freeman for advice, and he tells them the tricks of the Four Horsemen. And by essence, he's also telling the audience the magician's secrets. On one part, because I think he's just there to help guide the audience along the chase. So on one part, you feel a sense of awe because you know now how the trick is done, but then later you feel bummed to know how the trick is done. I don't know if that makes sense. It's kind of like, it's better to not know, like to keep the mystery in your mind rather than knowing it. And in the movie, Mark Ruffalo does not believe in magic, while Melanie Laurent is more open-minded. She tells Mark, and I'm paraphrasing the gist of what she said, "Magic is something that makes you smile because it's a mystery. It evokes a sense of wonder in us, our natural curiosity." For me, that's pretty much the theme of the movie. Keeping that sense of awe and wonder in a world where there are no more secrets, where everyone wants to know everything. There is a lot of things in the movie, that I like. For one thing, I liked watching Morgan Freeman play a slime ball, Schadenfreude, and the look on his face when he gets his comeuppance. The banter between Woody Harrelson and Jesse Eisenberg, and of course Mark Ruffalo. And I like the sense of awe. I also like the sense of awe and wonder it gave me when the four horsemen were doing their magic and escaping from the FBI using their magic. I find the movie is like a magic trick. You had fun trying to figure out how they pulled off the trick, but once you know how they did the trick, that feeling of curiosity is gone. And as much as I enjoyed watching the movie, the feeling of enjoyment is fleeting. The movie is like a flash paper. There's a thing there that explains what flash paper is in the movie. It's basically kind of paper that magicians use. It burns itself so fast it doesn't leave any odor or smoke. It's gone without any trace. So the movie is like a flash paper. It burns so fast, creating a spectacle, and then it's gone. Without any trace. That's how I think the movie is. It's a fun movie, but don't expect anything deep from it. I would have liked to see more of the banter that goes on between the four horsemen. Somehow, the trick or the heist took over the movie, and everyone of the talented cast was just there to service it. It's unfortunate, because for all the slickness and movement director Louis Leterrier put into the movie, the director and the writers forgot it's not the heist, or in this case, the trick, that makes a heist movie awesome. It's the characters that inhabit that world who would build up the anticipation in the audience's mind, which would end up making the illusion or the heist work. Think of every heist movie that you liked. Ocean's 11. I could say a heist, but it's an escape movie. The Great Escape. That's kind of like a heist thing, but they're trying to escape. But yeah, things like that. It's not the escape itself. It's the build up to the escape. It's, the characters are building up to this event. And on this movie, the director forgot that, or the writers forgot that. They focused on the heist. And on this movie, the heist is divided into three acts. Act 1, Act 2, and Act 3. And Act 1 is set in Las Vegas. Then Act 2 is set in New Orleans. And Act 3, the finale, is set in New York City. And they kind of focused on that. And they, instead of just focusing on the characters, they focused on the plot, the process, and they focused on the chase. So that's what I think, if I have a criticism about the movie, that would be it.
My favorite scenes in the movie were not the chase scenes or fight scenes or even the magic tricks. It's the scenes where people are just talking and you get to know who these people are. For example, the first time the four horsemen get to meet each other, and the scenes where the four horsemen are being interrogated by Mark Ruffalo are the scenes I find I enjoyed the most. Yeah, that's where you see the chemistry and the tension and the back and forth. All qualities that, for me anyway, I find interesting in a movie. So, what I did like too was that the writers grounded the world in the current U.S. financial environment. And it reflected in the story how the financial crisis, the recession, and even Hurricane Katrina, you know, its aftermath, affected everyone, both rich and poor. And it shows in the story. And so I like that aspect in the movie. So anyway, have you seen the movie Now You See Me? What did you think of it? How did you feel after you watched the movie? If you want to share your thoughts to the listeners out there, give me a call. 604-822-2487. 604-822-2487. And mind you, I am, you know, very patient person. But please, you know, I know if you want to talk about movies, then I'll talk about movies. But don't just go random stuff on me. But seriously, this thing is recorded on air. There's like everything I say, everything that you guys call, it's recorded. And then of course I'm putting it up on air, so it's there up there. You know, so to any, you know, who decide to just suddenly call and just talk about Cookie Monsters and drunk dial, you're basically on air live, and your voice will be on the internet forever. So mind you, anyway, you just give me a call, you know. But seriously, just, you know, if you want to talk about movies, call me. 604-822-2487. Or you can email me, theprojectionist.citr@gmail.com. Or by Twitter, @Michael_Adelior. So that's pretty much it there. And I will, for now, where are you? Okay. For now, we will go to some more commercial breaks. Just transfer here, because... Okay, hold on for a second here. Hope, mind your patience. Forgive me for the dead air. Oof. Hope you guys are having a good time today. Okay, here you go. Right,
$1 billion on the ground, all stretched out and uncurled, would extend about 4 times around the circumference of the world.
Become a friend of CITR and get great discounts in the West End at
Australian Boot Company, Banyan Books and Sound, Baru Latino Restaurante, The Bike Kitchen, Cove, Dentry's Pub, Displace Hatchery, Limelight, The Eatery, Fresh is Best Salsa, Gargoyles, Prussian Music, Rufus's Guitar Shop, and the UBC Bookstore.
It pays to be a friend of CITR. To find out more, visit us in room 233 of the sub on the UBC campus or online at citr.ca.
Movies are a great way to understand the culture and thought process of a generation. And the 7th Annual Taiwanese Film Festival is taking place at the Downtown Vancouver International Film Center from June 14th to 16th. It will be featuring some of the best Chinese films from the small island of Taiwan. Come and experience a different world and get to know more about the many groups of people living in this awesome city. For more details, please visit twff.ca. Again, that is twff.ca.
Get your early bird passes for the Vancouver Folk Music Festival until June 11th.
Step outside normal society with Steve Earle and the Dukes, Dvachka, and Vancouver's own Hannah Georges.
The Vancouver Folk Music Festival, July 19th to 21st at Jericho Beach Park. More information at thefestival.bc.ca.
The Vancouver Folk Fest is proudly sponsored by CITR 101.9.
Okay, we are back. You are listening to The Projectionist here on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver, Canada, and online on CITR.ca. So, no one called, but that's okay. So next item for the show is we're going to the news and screenings happening in Vancouver for the upcoming week. So for next week, the new commercial movie coming out this Friday will be The Internship, the one with starring Vince Vaughn and Owen Wilson. The Kings of Summer. I think it won an awards in Sundance. It's about the coming of age. Some kids decided to build their own house during the summer. And the slasher, I don't know. Well, it's basically a horror genre. I don't know the exact subgenre. More like slasher, I would say. It's the slasher movie, The Purge. The one with Ethan Hawke. And where in the concept is for one night in 1 year, for I think a certain amount of time, everyone can do whatever they want and no one can stop them. So people can just go on and kill people. That's kind of thing. So, and because it helps people release the evil inside them or whatever they want to release. But that's the concept of the movie The Purge. So those are the three movies that I know of that will be showing this Friday at the commercial theaters in Vancouver and BC. The movies The Internship, The Kings of Summer, and The Purge. As for movies showing in Vancouver's art house cinemas, now showing at the Van City Theater, the animated film from Spain titled Wrinkles, or the Spanish title Arrugas. So the Spanish title is called, of the movie, is Arrugas, but the English title is called Wrinkles. It's an animated film from Spain. It's directed by Ignacio Ferreras. It's about two elderly men at a care facility for the aged who became friends. It's based on Paco Roca's multiple award-winning graphic novel of the same name. It will be playing for another week at the Van City Theater. So it's extended for another week. Then a movie from South Korea titled Pieta, directed by Kim Ki-duk, one of my favorite filmmakers. He's not on the list because I haven't seen most of his films, but you know, the one that I saw was Three Iron, which was very good. I like that movie. Pieta won the Golden Lion Award at last year's Venice Film Festival. It's the highest prize the Venice Film Festival gives to a film. I guess it's the Venice Film Festival's version of a Best Picture. Apparently on the Van City Theater's program guide, it says the movie is a challenging and tough film, violent and provocative, an intense drama, but if you survive the first hour, the payoff tells us something unexpectedly poetic and moving about the relative value of money and compassion in today's capitalist society. I don't know if you're pumped up to watch that movie now. The movie is about a brutal loan shark redeemed by the unqualified love of a woman claiming to be his long-lost mother. You'll still be able to catch Pieta on the big screen tomorrow, Wednesday, and Thursday. And after that, I think it's done. So the next one, starting on Friday, is a documentary from Romania and Poland titled Krulik, The Path to Beyond. Directed by Anka Damian, the documentary is about Claudiu Krulik, a young Romanian who supported himself by buying goods in Poland and then selling them in his native Romania. In 2007, he was arrested for theft in Poland. But at that time, he had been in Italy. So basically, he was sent to prison for a crime he did not commit. And this is a documentary. It's a true story. So Krulik's protests were dismissed, and his pleads to the Romanian consul for help were fruitless. So what Krulik did is he began a hunger strike. Prison doctors dismissed signs of his deteriorating health, and when they finally agreed to force feed him, his lung was injured by a needle. After Krulik's death, authorities and the doctors deny responsibility. He became a pawn in a Kafkaesque miscarriage of justice. The documentary is by turns chilling, heartbreaking, and also ironic, with black humor forcing through. The film was made with a mix of techniques including hand-drawn animation and animated photographs. So that's starting on Friday. It's the documentary Krulik, The Path to Beyond. I don't know if you guys are interested on that. So those are the movies showing at the cinema at the Van City Theater for the next few days and for next week. Then this Friday, at the Cinematheque, you can still catch tomorrow, Wednesday, June 5, the continuation of the mini retrospective of the collaboration between writer-producer Charles Brackett and writer-director Billy Wilder with the films The Major and The Minor. It's Billy Wilder's debut feature film, and the next one is Five Graves to Cairo. It's Billy Wilder's second film. I saw those two films on Monday, so you can catch them for the last time this Wednesday. Projected in 35mm film. So it's the last time you'll see those two films, The Major and The Minor and Five Graves to Cairo. I've seen those two movies yesterday, Monday, and The Major and The Minor was very fun, very funny. It had that, you know, that false identity comedy going on, and Five Graves to Cairo. You know, unfortunately, I don't know what happened, but I fell asleep. It's a spy espionage film, supposed to be, you know, if you're a fan of Jean Le Carré, you know, like espionage writing, it's pretty good. And you know, for the most part, it had an interesting premise. I did get annoyed because I think Billy Wilder, or both of them, Charles Brackett, they added humor in the wrong places. It just annoyed me that there's some humor like where if they played it straight all throughout and they cranked up the tension, I think it would be awesome. But the weird, like almost like humor that are like, I don't know, because when I talk about the humor, as in there's the story is about this British tank soldier who's the only one who survived, and he goes to this hotel somewhere in, I don't know where it is, in North Africa, and this hotel is run by, it's called the Empress of Britain, and from there he disguises himself as a waiter, and from there he ends up discovering that some secret thing, and then suddenly the Germans come and the hotel is surrounded, they're staying at the hotel, and he's in the presence of Field Marshal Rommel, and as he was there, and so he's there trying to gather intelligence. It has a very interesting concept or interesting story. But the thing that annoyed me was that there was a character, the manager who got the hotel, because all the British soldiers and the British staff, they all left the hotel. So the hotel was left to this Egyptian guy. And so he basically owns the hotel. And he's all like, all his reactions are so over the top. And it's very provincial. I don't know where, I don't know, it's like, I don't know if you've seen those like old movies in Hollywood where like there's like the black person's like all like almost like not real, they're how they act, like not like, oh geez sir, it's like something like that, but this guy's an Arab, so it's like, yeah, it just annoyed me because it took away from the tension of the movie. And so those are the two films that you could still catch for the last time this Wednesday, June 5, The Major and the Minor and Five Graves to Cairo. It's showing tomorrow at the Cinematheque. And on next Wednesday, it's from the Billy Wilder and Charles Brackett retrospective. It will be showing on June 12th, next Wednesday, the comedies Midnight and A Foreign Affair. And mind you, I actually saw most of the Charles Brackett and Billy Wilder during the retrospective. And man, Billy Wilder's a funny guy, like funny director, and Charles Brackett too, how most of their films are comedy. I mean, mind you, he did made the awesome, Sunset Boulevard, which by the way is not, I thought it was a film noir, but it's actually not. Yeah, but it's an awesome movie too. Anyway, you can see that next Wednesday, June 12th, at the Cinematheque, Midnight and A Foreign Affair. So if you're a Billy Wilder fan, those movies are for you. And they're all projected in glorious 35mm film print, which nowadays is starting to get rarer and rarer. And on Thursday, June 6th, at the Cinematheque, part of the Powell Street Festival, is the 5th edition of the Kibatsu Cinema. It's happening every Thursday in June. Kibatsu Cinema is a celebration of the odd and the eccentric in Japanese pop culture and contemporary Japanese film. Kibatsu is a cinema word denoting a person or a thing that is, by ordinary standards, unusual or unconventional. So that's the movie showing this Thursday will be Casting Blossoms to the Sky and The Dark Harbor. And for next Thursday, June 13, it will be the Japanese anime Time of Eve, the movie, and the documentary The Echo of Astro Boy's Footsteps. So for anyone who that documentary The Echo of Astro Boy's Footsteps, that's a documentary about this sound designer who created Akira's soundtrack, the sound effects. So if you're into sound design, sound editing, something worth checking out. And starting this Friday, the Cinematheque will be showing their Harold Lloyd silent film, Safety Last. So it's starting this Friday, the Cinematheque will be showing the Harold Lloyd silent film, Safety Last. To those who don't know, Safety Last is that famous movie where Harold Lloyd dangles at the side of the building to great comedic effect. Together with Charlie Chaplin and Buster Keaton, Harold Lloyd ranks up there as among the greatest comedians in the silent cinema era. So don't miss the chance to see it projected, again, in glorious 35mm film print. And, you know, I love, for me, I'm a purist. If as much as possible, if I can watch a movie on the theater projected in 35mm film print, I think that's the only way you should watch a movie. You know, as much as possible, if you can. Yeah. Also, starting this Friday, at the Cinematheque is the movie The We and the I, directed by Michel Gondry. So to those who don't know, Michel Gondry is the director of The Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind and The Science of Sleep. And also he did The Green Hornet, the one with the Green Hornet, the movie. The one with, what's his name? The Vancouver actor. God, I forgot. Anyway, I know Christoph Waltz is in that movie. Anyway, so that's Michel Gondry. So if worth checking out, he has a movie called The We and the I. It's showing at the Cinematheque starting this Friday for a 1 week exclusive engagement. And I think, and the movie is about this group of teens in Bronx, New York, and it's set in this bus after school, and you just basically, it's like a fly on the wall movie where you just see kids talk and what have you, and you see their lives and something. So yeah, that's the movie The We and the I, showing at the Cinematheque this Friday. So for showtimes and more info about the films I mentioned, just go to the Van City Theater website, viff.org/theater. And to the Pacific Cinematheque's website, thecinematheque.ca. Special events happening this week. The special events happening this week. There will be, on this weekend, there will be the Van City Theater, Saturday and Sunday, it will be the Vancouver Festival of Ocean Films. Films and presentations intended to instill a degree of education and understanding of oceanic conservation issues, especially those relating to Canada's coastal waters. Topics showcased include surfing, stand-up paddling, overfishing, and erosion of ecosystems. So that's June 8 and 9, this weekend at the Van City Theater. For more info about the films they're showing, you can go to vfof.ca. That's vfof.ca. Basically, it's Vancouver Festival of Ocean Films. And starting this Friday, this coming Friday, will be Sound and Vision, an experimental collaboration. Art Waste and CineWorks Independent Filmmaker Society present a project consisting of 6 live multimedia performances involving collaborations between Vancouver-based experimental filmmakers and musicians that explore relationships and interplays of audible and visual language. So it'll be this June 7 from 7 to 10 p.m. at the CineWorks Annex. That's at 235 Alexander Street. It's free admission. So for more info, you can call 604-685-3841 or you could visit cineworks.ca. So the phone number is 604-685-3841. cineworks.ca. Okay, and on a different note, I would like to take this moment to ask you to think about the first time you saw your favorite film. Now, personally, I can't remember the first time I saw my favorite film. Well, I would think that favorite film would be when you're young. Anyway, I want you to take the moment and ask yourself when the first time you saw your favorite film. Film is one of the most powerful and at the same time one of the most accessible art forms of our age. Oh, we have a caller. I stole from it. Hello, you're on air. Hello? Hello, hey. You're on
Hello.
Air.
Hello?
Yes.
Okay, I want to apologize to you and all your listeners. This is Naked Poet, and I plead the... I plead the Pissed Amendment.
Oh, well, that's okay.
By the way, I gotta tell you, Old Yeller made me cry.
That's your favorite film?
No, no, I don't. To say a favorite is like only listening to one record all over and over and over again.
Mm.
Okay, I like a lot of different things, like a cornucopia of utopia. And okay, you're taking me to another planet now, because E.T. What?
Your favorite film is E.T.
I don't have. Hey, how many faves on YouTube do you have? How many faves on SoundCloud, Twitter, yada yada, Facebook?
I'm not.
You know, I think that's the wrong question. I think you should make it more general, like a horoscope. Because favorite film, shit, man. There's been a shitload.
Yes, I agree. There's a lot of favorite films.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
How about the top five? Yeah. Would be Old Yeller, Pinocchio. I got a big nose, but I don't lie. I just didn't have a helmet and brownies playing bat catcher. Yeah, those bitches can play baseball.
Mm.
Okay, I got to ask you this. Have you ever been set up on a blind date by your roommate and felt there was no way to escape?
No, actually not, thankfully.
Okay, then, okay.
Okay, Naked Poet, I hope you're taking it easy.
I don't know what to say, shit, man.
That's okay, relax.
I'm just a crazy bitch who woke up this morning with a spliff already lit between my lips. And
Okay.
And I just want to say, man, you're sick, and I'm not talking.
Okay, why don't you just say calm down and take it easy over there?
Well, right now I'm outside of Old Bar. I just kidnapped Nardwar in a stolen Jaguar. Okay, so I'm a little excited.
You kidnapped Nardwar in a stolen Jaguar?
Yeah, we're parked outside of CITR.
Yeah?
And we're looking for wherever you are because he says that you're gonna be a star.
Are you for real? Okay.
Oh shit, I'm full of shit. Sorry, Nardwar, I take it back. You didn't say this kid has a chance. Put him in the cage with a,
Well, Naked Poet, thank you for sharing your opinions and
insanity?
Everything.
Insanity? Well, you're driving me crazy. Where's Dio's pissed off Hans von Glock?
Well, anyway, I have to go, and I hope you take it easy over there.
Where's the life? I mean, I can't even play with myself.
Sorry about that.
Let
you have a good night.
Playing a movie.
Okay, that was Naked Poet. I apologize for that, listeners out there. So her favorite film, Naked Poet's favorite films, that what I gathered was Old Yeller and E.T. And I think that was, yeah. Anyway, back to my question. Yeah, just think of your first time you saw a favorite film. Now, this is going somewhere. It's not just me randomly giving a question. So film is one of the most powerful and at the same time, one of the most accessible art forms of our age. It entertains, enlightens, and it educates. With that being said, since 1972, the Cinematheque continues to be a vital part of the Vancouver cultural landscape. For 40 years, it has become one of the most active film organizations in North America, with over 500 film screenings per year of international cinema, director retrospectives, contemporary and classic Canadian films, emerging talents, art house masterpieces, and experimental films. However, the Cinematheque is a non-profit film institute. Admission sales and membership fees only cover 20% of the Cinematheque's operating costs. So for the entire month of June, the Cinematheque will be holding its Film Lovers donation campaign to help raise money to support the Cinematheque's operating costs and other programs, such as the Education Department, which offers film and media education programs and resources for youth, teachers, and other community members. For a minimum donation of $2, you will receive a card where you can write your name and favorite film, and it will be posted on the donor wall in the theater lobby. For a minimum donation of $25, you will be entered for a chance to win a free private screening at the Cinematheque. If you want to make a donation, you can go to the cinematheque.ca/donate, or you can call the Cinematheque at 604-688-8202, or you can just go straight to the box office during the evenings to make your donation in person. On June 15, Saturday, that's I think next Saturday, the Cinematheque, is it next Saturday? Yes, next Saturday, the Cinematheque will hold its fifth annual open house from 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. It's a free event. Tour the projection booth, library, and archive. Participate in a special silent film activity with our education department. Join our donor program. Bid on film posters. Then at 2 p.m., grab a complimentary bag of the city's best popcorn and settle into your seat for an essential cinema experience with a free screening of Charlie Chaplin's 1917 film Easy Street. With live piano accompaniment by world-class keyboard artist Sarah Davis Bushner, followed by Harold Lloyd's 1923 classic Safety Last. So it's a free. So basically, it's an open house. This is next Saturday, June 15, from 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. It's a free event. Everyone can go in there and check out the Cinematheque. It's the Cinematheque is at what's that? Helmken, I think. Yeah, the next one, like the next street north of Davie Street. So it's on Howe and Helmken, if I'm not. It's just over there. And later on at 7:30 that evening, again, same thing, Saturday, June 15, later on in the evening at 7:30 p.m., there will be a screening of MGM's 1925 silent version of Ben-Hur, directed by Fred Niblo. Okay, we got a caller on air. Let me just put you on there. Hello? Caller, you're on air? Okay, there's no caller on air. Hello? Hello? Oh, okay, sorry about that. I hope that's not naked board. Anyway, that's again later on at 7:30 p.m. on Saturday, June 15, next Saturday, there will be a screening of MGM's 1925 silent version of Ben-Hur, directed by Fred Niblo. And it's not the 1959 Charlton Heston Ben-Hur. This one is the silent film, the first Ben-Hur. It will be renowned pianist Sarah Davis Bushner will also provide live musical accompaniment. So basically, it's very old school, where you get the silent film, like how they do it back in the day. The film is projected silent, and then you get live piano music, happening there. So it's pretty cool. It's a rare happening, and there is also an encore presentation of the same event on Sunday, June 16 at 4 p.m. So for the Ben-Hur screening, ticket price is at $15. All ages are welcome. Cinematheque membership is not required. So that's pretty much it. I kind of went overboard, but that's the nature of the beast. I apologize. Yes, apologize for Miss Naked Poet. Naked Poet, wherever you are out there, I hope you're taking it easy. And, like Nardwar would say, keep rocking in the free world. And doot 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 doot. Anyway, I am going. So anyway, oh, I forgot. Right here. Okay, we have someone on the line here. Hello. Hello.
All right. Final. Analysis on your little show there. Okay, 1.5 nipples up. And
sorry about that, naked poet, but we cannot. I know it's like the watershed hour, but we cannot have that kind of language on air. I hope you understand. So, anyway, I hope you guys are doing well over there. Just to be honest with you, I only had you calling me the station naked poet. So, even though I hope you are doing well there and you have a good week. That's pretty much it for this episode for The Projectionist. If you have any cinema or filmmaking events you want me to mention on the show and let the word out, or if you want to share your thoughts, questions, opinions, suggestions of a movie you want me to review, you can send them by email, theprojectionist.citr@gmail.com, or you can send me a Twitter. My Twitter handle is @Michael_Edilior. That's Edillor. If you're interested in finding out when the next episode of The Projectionist will be, you can follow me on Twitter also. Again, it's twitter.com/Michael_Edilior. Or you can follow me on Facebook. Facebook.com/MichaelEdilior.film. And I also post a link to the podcast of this show on my Facebook and Twitter pages. So, to whoever's listening right now, Naked Poet, or to anyone out there too who's just listening, I thank you for spending the time with me and listening to me ramble about movies. I wish you all have a good week, and I hope you enjoy yourselves time at the movies. Let me say that again. I hope you enjoy yourselves at the movies. You have a good night, guys. Take care. We'll be right back.
See, in this world, there's two kinds of people, my friend. Those with loaded guns, and those who dig. You dig.